Hey everybody, welcome to the Surgery Set. I'm Jonathan Kohler, an assistant professor of surgery here at UW-Madison, home of the Badgers. This is a podcast about surgery and the individuals who are at the cutting edge of it, and we're glad you're here. Our guest today is Dr. Brian Zuckerbraun. He's professor of surgery and chief of the Division of General and Trauma Surgery at the University of Pittsburgh. He's been in Pittsburgh for the majority of his medical career. After completing both his residency and fellowship training there, he eventually accepted a full-time faculty position and has been there ever since. Dr. Zuckerbraun's research interests center around using carbon monoxide as a therapeutic agent for regulating mitochondrial responses to influence immunity and inflammation. He talked a lot about that in his grand rounds, and we're going to talk about that with him a little bit as well. A fun fact to add is that Dr. Zuckerbraun is also the team general surgeon for both the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Pittsburgh Penguins. We did not talk about that, if I had only known. With that, we welcome Dr. Brian Zuckerbraun to the Surgery Set.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah. I actually just passed you in an elevator, you probably don't remember, in St. Louis at the Surgical Infection Society meeting. So did you come out straight up from there, or were you, went home for a little bit?
Went home, okay. Did some work, saw the family.
And then came up to Madison on this beautiful spring day to talk to us about what your lab has been doing in carbon monoxide as a therapeutic agent and its role in modulating heme oxygenase and sort of the clinical implications of what you call an asphyxiant gas.
Yeah.
Very cool stuff.
Yeah, I think, you know, the first time people hear carbon monoxide, they automatically think toxicity and, you know, the stories that come out on the news, you know, family dies from carbon monoxide poisoning. And I think that's founded. But again, this is a isolated, very pure carbon monoxide as a medical therapy, just as you would consider any other drug therapy or inhaled gas-based therapy. And, you know, I think the work and the field, and of course, you know, I highlighted my work here today that I've done in conjunction with a number of other collaborators, both in the University of Pittsburgh and elsewhere. But, you know, there's so many great investigators that have helped to move the field forward, but it's exciting work for sure.
And you're a trauma surgeon by practice.
Mm-hmm.
Can you just talk a little bit about how you integrate what is a very pure basic science lab and obviously a very clinical life?
Yeah. You know, I think as a surgeon scientist, it is important to, you know, have a question that you're or questions that you're interested in trying to answer. And when those questions relate to what you do every day clinically and, you know, what you do in your practice and how you strive to better serve the population that you're taking care of, you know, it becomes a labor of love to investigate the other side, even when it gets down in the weeds on the what seems like not very clinically relevant, you know, biology or preclinical studies. But I think as long as it's the overarching goal is guiding that, and I think we as surgeons have the unique opportunity in contact with patients to bring that to the lab and then hopefully you bring the findings from the lab back out to patients. And that's kind of the point where we're at now. So
I think that's like a really profound point too, that so much of basic science now seems to be run and directed by PhDs, you know, because they have the training and the time to spend in a lab to really sort of guide and understand the basic science. But there is a role, right, for surgeons to sort of help guide basic science, not just let's design a better clamp, but let's look at the molecular action behind these diseases that we see.
I agree. And, you know, I think, you know, the one thing that has proven to be true is that anything done as part of a collaborative effort in a team, be it clinical work, be it research, is going to more likely be successful. It's going to be more satisfying because you have someone to celebrate your ups and downs and someone to move things forward with and to spend time with. And I think that's incredibly valuable. And you don't have to be someone engaged in basic science. I think if you pulled anyone who is in the audience during these grand rounds, particularly the people who have put their 10,000 hours in, they're going to have incredible insights into the clinical course of patients that even without having your own basic science lab or even a real true understanding of basic science can make the observations that can really help guide others that know more of or are thinking more about the molecular biology and the pathways and the opportunities to therapeutically harness some of those pathways. But I do think the people who straddle both worlds are uniquely poised to move things forward. And again, it's hard to compete with someone who's doing that full time. But again, why compete when you can collaborate? So.
And what's the structure of your lab? I mean, how have you managed to do that in an effective way? Because you obviously have managed to do this in an extraordinarily effective way.
Yeah,
you have PhDs and that sort of basic science resource within the laboratory infrastructure.
Right. So my lab, again, a lot of it has been dependent upon collaboration. You don't have to necessarily perform all these assays or have the most in-depth understanding of what you want to look at, as long as you know people who do and want to work with people who do. But really, the ability to do this has come from an environment, number one, that values that. And so at the University of Pittsburgh, from our leadership, we've had tremendous examples from within the leadership who have based their career on these types of paths. And then I've really been dependent upon working with eager lab residents. I don't have a PhD working for me directly, though, again, collaborate with some people who do that full time. But it's really been, you know, I love clinical work and I love doing clinical work. And that's, you know, my number one passion, but this is a close second. And so, you know, taking advantage of time and finding the time to, you know, read those couple extra papers or edit that manuscript is, it's not difficult if you enjoy doing it. And what makes it fun is working with, you know, the people who are developing and possibly looking at making a career at it the same way that I did.
Yeah, I mean, you talk a little bit in your Grand Rounds about your residency, and it really seems like one of those classic stories of chance favoring the prepared mind, right? Like you were working in nitric oxide and sort of came across carbon monoxide and then tested carbon monoxide in every animal model that just like happened to be running on the campus at the time, right?
Right. Yeah, you know, I think the one thing that basic science taught me that I didn't really appreciate, but I think is true for clinical medicine also, is that the idea of integrative learning. And so when I went to the lab, the initial question I was studying, there wasn't much in vascular biology looking at this signaling pathway I was interested in. So you read all the neuroscience literature and you read the, you know, so on and so forth outside of your field to understand the signaling pathway. And it's chance favors the prepared mind, but it's also, you know, this idea that, you know, versatility of knowledge creates opportunities for you to take advantage of that. And I think it's true for clinical medicine too. I think, you know, any opportunity we have to, even if you just narrow it to surgical disciplines, but look at surgical practices and disciplines outside of what you do every day, you can gain a lot from that because you become isolated in your own world, in your own body of literature. And I think over recent years, our communication has been somewhat stifled just by the growth of these really strong, important divisions and furthering the clinical opportunities. But we still need to cross-fertilize, so to speak.
Yeah. I mean, it's a real testament to just the value of a university, right? I mean,
right. Absolutely.
I knew when I saw you quote Shakespeare in your talk on Imagines that like you were, you know, thinking broadly. It was great. So thank you so much for coming in to join us today and for your great talk available on the web for people to see. Really shows just the immense depth that you've taken this work in a very novel pathway and very exciting future and potential clinical trials coming down the line. But thank you so much for joining us.
Great. Thanks very much for having me.
If you enjoy The Surgery Set or have suggestions on how we can make our program better, please provide us with your feedback. You can rate our podcast and leave your comments on iTunes, Podbean, and Stitcher. More comments makes it easier for people to find us, so please leave your rating and your comments. Or you can always just send us email at podcast@surgery.wisc.edu. Join us next time when we hear from Dr. Sarah Tevis. She's one of our former general surgery chief residents here at UW and the founding chair of UW's Resident Quality and Safety Committee. She'll be here to help shed some light on a few of the most pressing questions surrounding surgical quality and implementation of quality metrics. We'll hope you join us.
I think that what's most important is to work in a place where you have a really great culture of safety, where every member of the organization is focused on the patient and what's best for the patient.
The Surgery Set is a production of the Department of Surgery at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. This episode was produced by Veronica Watson and myself. It was recorded by Chris Hansen and edited by Alex Worley. Our theme song is On Wisconsin, arranged and produced by Jamie Schmidt. I encourage you to visit us at surgery.wisc.edu, where you can find links to Grand Rounds, free CME credits, and more. You can also check out the UW School of Medicine and Public Health video library for a wide range of medical education resources at videos.med.wisc.edu. In addition, you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Podbean, and Stitcher, and of course you can follow us on social media. You can like our Facebook page, And also find us on Twitter at Whisk Surgery or at J.E. Kohler. That's K-O-H-L-E-R. Please feel free to let us know how we're doing, and don't hesitate to let us know of any topics you'd like us to cover. Thanks. We hope you check back soon. On Wisconsin.